of federal workers, close Social Security Administration field offices, effectively shutter entire agencies, deport immigrants, scale back protections for people of color, and cut federal funding for health programs. And throughout the world, and especially Europe, protesters are in the streets taking part in hundreds of demonstrations dubbed the hands-off movement. Hands-off the UK, hands-off Gaza, hands-off Ukraine, and etc. And all this adds to protesters' concerns of looming global recession resulting from Donald Trump's aggressive global tariffs regime. And we'll discuss these anti-Trump rallies in your spotlight program. And now for this package.
But every point in tariffs is worth more.
President Donald Trump's second term has been marked by bold and controversial moves, from imposing tariffs on nearly all foreign trading partners, which he hails as an economic revolution, to intensifying deportation efforts that have sparked both praise and outrage. Trump's agenda has reshaped the nation's social and economic landscape. While some applaud these measures as necessary steps to protect American jobs and security, critics warn of rising consumer prices, economic uncertainty, and the human cost of aggressive immigration policies. The fallout has been global. On Saturday, protests erupted across the world, reaching a fever pitch. In Washington, D.C., tens of thousands gathered, joined by demonstrators in cities from New York to Los Angeles and even as far as Paris and Berlin.
I think it's important to speak up. I think silence is not an option. I think you have to stay engaged. You have to stay vigilant. I think it's not only for our community at large, but the world at large. I think that enough is enough.
The hands-off rallies, organized by over 150 groups, voiced opposition to government downsizing, trade policies, and what many see as an erosion of civil liberties. The message was clear. Resistance to Trump's policies is mounting, and the world is watching. Many remarks focus on the role played in Trump's administration by wealthy donors, most notably Elon Musk, who has served as an advisor to the president and has been playing a key role in government downsizing.
They would have our people believe that the reasons we can't afford rent, the reason we can't afford health care, the reason we can't afford groceries is because of other people in our own communities. Yes, we know that this system is rigged and the status quo doesn't work for Americans, but it's not rigged against the billionaires, it's rigged for the billionaires and for the corporations.
Adding to the tension, recent polls show approval ratings for President Trump slightly slipping. As the dust settles on a night of unprecedented demonstrations, one question looms large. What lies ahead for Trump's presidency? Will the anger towards his policies subside, or will they ignite further division and unrest? Only time will tell.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
And now for our guests. Joining us is Mr. John Stepling, author and commentator out of Inderøy, Norway. And Mr. Daniel Patrick Welch, political commentator, joining us from Boston, Massachusetts. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the broadcast here. Thank you for your patience while you ran that report for our viewers. John, I guess we'll start with you in Inderøy, Norway. Good to have you, bud. Your initial thoughts on why do you think the world is mobilizing the way we're witnessing against the Trump administration?
I think that this is the this is what happens when 40 years ago you pulled the plug on public education, and you have an extraordinarily misinformed and politically ignorant population. Not to say that Trump doesn't warrant protest, but of course so did Joe Biden and so did Obama and so did every president back to Reagan, certainly. And I think that part of this is this is liberal America wringing their hands in outrage at things that they perceive as dangerous. I saw no protest signs about the bombing of civilians in Yemen, for example, not one. Very little protest about Israeli policy and the abetting and support for a genocide in Gaza. I'm not seeing any protests about that. In fact, I saw signs at some protests, hands off NATO. You know, this is, you despair at the kind of hopeless stupidity of much of this. But this is the U.S., which has been in sharp decline for at least a decade, longer than that. The transference of wealth to the top 1% happened under Obama. The living conditions, the quality of life has continued to deteriorate over the last 20 years, and really much longer than that. But certainly, I think you can say since Reagan, we have seen a steady decline in job security, quality of life. We've seen a mental health crisis, a crisis of obesity. People are miserable and unhappy, and they also take offense at Trump's style. And there's been a lot of, and understandably so. He talks like a mafia don, and he is insulting to people, and he's crude and vulgar and obviously uneducated, and he has this team of techno bot guys who are equally offensive, I think, to the general public. J.D. Vance has a really questionable bedside manner, I have to say, and so people are offended, but they're getting desperate. And it almost wouldn't matter who was president. If it was Kamala Harris, people would be just as desperate because the system is failing. And that's the message here. It's really failing. And the infrastructure is crumbling. And there are no answers. And there are no jobs. And there's no hope for anybody right now. That's the overriding reality.
Thank you there. And Daniel, thanks for your patience there. Welcome to our Spotlight program there, pal. Daniel, many people in London are holding up signs, no to MAGA hate, dump Trump, resist the tyrant, save democracy. What do you think about Donald Trump and his policies getting people motivated to this level of mobilization? Or to John's point, do you feel he's just been the scapegoat for a declining living standard over a generation now in America and abroad?
Well, I could, the hair raises on the back of my neck at labeling Trump a scapegoat of anything. So I was bummed that John got to go first. I love John. I admire, he's a great writer. But, I figured he'd steal all my lines. Yeah, I am a veteran of these marches. I've been doing it since I was five, going to counter an anti-busing march in South Boston in 1970. You know, it is important for people to be on the streets. But John is absolutely right. They're angry. They would be angry if Kamala, Kamala, Carmella, Carmel, whatever was president, but they wouldn't be in the streets because it wouldn't be organized by the party out of power. This looks to me depressingly and sadly like a color revolution, what the CIA has organized in country after country for the last 80 years, all having signs in the same fonts, although they don't need this because, you know, Bernays has taught them to meld people's minds in such a way that they come up with these self-thought things like the picture of Putin's puppets, Musk, Trump and Vance, right? I mean, this is stupidity gone off the rails. And what do they want? They, meaning the billionaire class's puppets who set this up. The other faction of the oligarchy. This is not, you know, billionaires shouldn't be running our government, but they have been forever. And this is just different billionaires. And so now what they're trying to get is back in power without changing anything serious. Get back the reins of power. That's what this is about. That's why you see hands off Ukraine. I mean, we're talking about World War III. We're talking about arming Diego Rivera, Diego Garcia to the teeth so that the Americans can attack Iran. Like, there's crazy stuff going on that's a continuity of long-held American foreign policy that threatens actually the world, not just people on Social Security in the United States. It's and these are completely ignored. I agree completely. No signs that I didn't roll my eyes at, quite frankly.
And you know what? I feel like we're going to get off on a tangent, but because it's a good tangent, it's pretty credible where you guys are taking this conversation. I'm going to stick with this. John, I want you to elaborate on what Daniel said about a color revolution organized type of thing by the intelligence we've seen over the decades, because this is a good point that we should probably dwell into. The fact that the Democratic Party is the one pushing this hands-off movement, and 1,200 demonstration sites over 50 U.S. states, and now they've obviously exported these to Europe and elsewhere. And it's so funny when we get into it, because all the Democratic pushback when Trump was in his first term, when Biden got in, and you guys both of you very well remember, he changed nothing. Not when it came to immigration, to everything the Democrats, especially Biden, lambasted Trump about and said that it's beyond inhumane. It's beyond. I mean, he used every word to demonize Trump and his policies. And guess what he did? All we saw was nothing more than continuity. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, well, American foreign policy never changes. And your other guest is right. And I'm a big fan of him as well, actually. There were no signs that I didn't roll my eyes at. I mean, just idiots that Trump was a communist agent, a Putin stooge, that, you know, he was somehow bringing world communism to America. It is mind-numbingly stupid stuff, and you do wonder about it. I don't want to think my fellow Americans have sunk into this level of ignorance, but I fear they have. Is this a psyop of some sort? Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. There's always agent provocateurs. There's always when it's organized at this level, one does start to question things. And look, Biden was the worst president in history, and there were no protests. Biden gave his son a pardon after obvious criminal misconduct of a pretty serious kind. He's just pardoned. We had COVID under Biden. We had all kinds of foreign policy crimes under Biden. His treatment of Israel was very much the same. The foreign policy rhetoric was the same. It's the same defense contractors in office and in that revolving door at the Pentagon, CIA, State Department. It's all the same people. What Trump brings out is a certain outrage because people dislike his style. I really think that a lot of it is he's just offensive to the sensibilities of people. But also, we have reached a point where standards of living in the U.S. have deteriorated hugely. There's no work. There's no optimism about a future in which there will be work. And, you know, you have people like Elon Musk talking about universal basic income and, you know, colonies on Mars and stuff. Yeah, I get that it starts to become disturbing because it's cloud cuckoo land. And The reality, however, is when you have people supporting American imperialism and all these protests continue to, you know, defend American imperialism, the wars in Gaza, 20 years in Afghanistan, on and on and on and on, 900 military bases around the world, and now Netanyahu is going to visit to push for a war against Iran. This never changes. So why are these people out on the streets right now? Maybe it's just economic. They fear the coming depression. But it feels a little suspicious. I agree with your other guest to that degree. The level of organization is surprising, let's say.
And the contradictions we see in Donald Trump, the character, Daniel, he's pushing himself off as this anti-war guy, yet he continues to fuel Israel's genocide in Gaza. He was actually a big part of the fact that the ceasefire in Gaza broke down, and hinting, using force against Iran, against Panama, Greenland, against Mexico for all the fentanyl coming into the States. Is this self-proclaimed anti-war Donald Trump who he is, or is he just part of the, what he refers to himself as the deep state, but he doesn't realize it?
Well, I hate the term deep state because it's just the state. That's what it is. It's the state. It is. It's the system. It's the ruling class. You know, Marx said, it's like there's an old meme of the Illuminati, and it says, "You mean ruling class, bro?" There's a picture of Marx with a glass of wine or something. I don't know. The thing is that, yes, he represents the billionaire class. There's no question about that. The thing about being an anti-war person is absurd and ridiculous. You can't say that. All that he ever actually said himself was that these wars were a waste of money and they were the wrong thing to do. I mean, he's very clearly looking to save money in Ukraine, to spend money to fight China on Taiwan and Iran and Yemen and so on. So it is true that what John said again about style. This is a projection. He's a con man. He's a hustler. That's who he's always been. He's trying. He's real estate, like a slumlord trying to make deals. You know, that's not that doesn't have any depth to it. And that's the whole thing, is that you can't attack Trump the person. Not that I care about the guy, but it doesn't rise to the level of mass protest. People should be voicing their actual concerns, not stylistic ones. Because I can agree with both. I know a lot of people. You run into someone in the pub who says, I like Trump. He pisses off the wrong people. I mean, the right people, sorry. He pisses off all the right people. That's what, you know, that's a style thing. They like that kind of style. Then the liberals who say he's gross and he's ew and he's this, plus he's just so offensive to everyone with a human heart. But again, style over substance has become the only metric by which Americans can value candidates and policies, and they ignore the facts, which are U.S. hegemony is going on continuously and is in real trouble. I won't doubt that the things against Trump in Europe and elsewhere are things against U.S. policy for two generations, and they should continue, and they are becoming successful in some ways, but not in the American political voting public.
Right.
At all.
And John, if I could quickly get your take on this whole, the terrorist regime by Donald Trump, it seemed to be irking everyone from New York to London. Tariffs on everyone, baseline of 10%, like a gratuity charge at a restaurant for practically everyone that you're trading with, additional tariff regimes ranging from 10 to 30% from China to Mexico, from Canada, you very well know, to your American so-called, pardon, your European so-called allies there. So it's shocking. Every single market index, at least 5%, were shaken over the last couple of days. A lot of economists say that a global recession is imminent. How do you see Trump's global tariff war here, John? And is it going to benefit, ultimately, the American consumer? I guess that's the big thing. he's emphasizing, he's trying to do.
Ultimately, the American working class will suffer the most from this. And he doesn't care about that. The idea that somehow Trump is stumbling blindly and clumsily into a global depression is nonsense. That's what they want. Ever since COVID, there has been this kind of restructuring, global economic restructuring, a kind of contraction of capital. This will end up hurting the working class. They will be disciplined further. They will be subjected to further controls and restrictions in how they lead their lives. These marches are not about the things that they really should be about, obviously. And all the way back to Reagan, you know, destroyed unions and crushed American labor. And that's really happening again. It may make Trump unpopular for a while, but he doesn't care because, you know, this is electoral theater in a way. The people who really run the country allow this theater to take place, and everybody gets up in arms about it and clutches their pearls and takes place in marches like this. But America people should be concerned with the imperialist wars and global destruction that the U.S. Now Israel, but the targeting of China, Russia, Iran, these are crazy imperialist adventures that the U.S. is less and less capable of prosecuting. The era of U.S. power, hegemonic power, is over, and so there is an undercurrent of desperation in all of this as well from the government side.
All right, we're just about out of time. Daniel, I wanted to give you more time. We have about a little less than a minute left. Trump's also, a lot of these protests are also pushing back on Donald Trump's cabinet appointments from Elon Musk to anti-vax Robert F. Kennedy to handle health and human services to Tulsi Gabbard running national intelligence services to Cash Patel heading the FBI. Good or bad for America, or to your earlier point, is he just doing this to tick people off?
He's just doing this to concentrate his power and justify the election, winning the election. Again, that's the scam just to win the election. What he's doing is what billionaires always do. Billionaires want to make more money for themselves. That's what the trade war is about, reshaping, pulling up the drawbridges so that America can be more of an autarky to get ready for this contraction. And they're late to the game. They are scared, and that despair is visible from below, and people are latching onto it for the wrong reasons.
Great talk, gentlemen. Appreciate having you both on. Stay safe to the both of you there. Don Stepling joining us there out of Inderøy, Norway, and also Daniel Patrick Welch joining us from Boston, Massachusetts. And this brings us to end your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear listeners, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. Brothers and sisters, we have reached 46th verse of Surah Qasas. Let's listen to the verse and we'll be back with our discussion.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَمَا كُنْتَ بِجَانِبِ الطُّورِ إِذْ نَادَيْنَا وَلَكِنْ رَحْمَةً مِّنْ رَبِّكَ لِتُنْذِرَ قَوْمًا مَّا أَتَاهُمْ مِّنْ نَذِيرٍ لِتُنْذِرَ قَوْمًا مَّا أَتَاهُمْ مِّنْ نَذِيرٍ
And you were not at the side of the mount when we called Moses, but were sent as a mercy from your Lord to warn a people to whom no warner had come before you, that they might be reminded.
So, in this verse, the Holy Quran is changing the view. The Quranic news is entirely from the source of divine revelation, and in the previous verse it was thoroughly discussed. But again, for emphasis on this very meaning, the Holy Quran adds, وَمَا كُنْتَ بِجَانِبِ الطُّورِ إِذْ نَادَيْنَا. You were not on the side of the Mount Tur when we called unto Moses. وَلَكِنْ رَحْمَةً مِّنْ رَبِّكِ. So, the Holy Quran continues in this verse. But this revelation, the fact that you are aware of what happened, رَحْمَةً مِّنْ رَبِّكِ, a mercy from your Lord, that you warn a people to whom no warner had come before.
لِتُنْذِرَ قَوْمًا مَا آتَاهُمْ مِّنْ نَذِيرٍ مِّنْ قَبْلِكِ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَتَذَكَّرُونَ,
so that they may receive admonition. So, surely speaking, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala reiterated the warnings and awakening events that had occurred in the old nations, when the Prophet of Islam sallallahu alaihi wasallam was not present. This Prophet was not present at that time. He did not witness them. But the Almighty Allah reiterated those warnings, those stories, those points, so that this Prophet would recite them for his misguided people. Probably they caused them to awaken. So this is a mercy. This is one of the clearest signs of mercy of the Almighty Allah. There arises a question here, that how does the Holy Quran say that no warner had come for this nation, that is the Arabs contemporary with the Prophet ﷺ, while we do know that there were times that there were some prophets. We know that there comes no time that the earth is empty of a godly hujjah, of proof. And the vicegerents of the prophets had always been present among their nation. But why does the Holy Quran say, وَمَا كُنْتَ بِجَانِبِ الطُّورِ إِذْ نَادَيْنَا وَلَكِنْ رَحْمَةً مِّنْ رَبِّكِ لِتُنْذِرَ قَوْمًا مَا أَتَاهُمْ مِّنْ نَذِيرٍ. But it is a mercy from your Lord that you warn a people to whom no warner had come before you. This is the important question that is arised in this episode. Try to have a thought about this question, and we'll be back after the break.
وَمَا كُنْتَ بِجَانِبِ الطُّورِ إِذْ نَادَيْنَا وَلَكِنْ
So, dear listeners, we raised an important question. We said that we know there is no time that the earth is empty of a godly hujjah and proof. At least there will be some wise journeys of the prophets who have always been present for their nation. But why does the Almighty Allah in this verse say that you are the one that is sent to the people? وَلَكِنْ رَحْمَةً مِنْ رَبِّكَ لِتُنْذِرَ قَوْمًا مَا أَتَاهُمْ مِنْ نَذِيرٍ. But you are a mercy. This was a mercy to you that you are aware of these stories of the previous generations. But you are to reiterate these stories to those people, لِتُنْذِرَ قَوْمًا مَا أَتَاهُمْ مِنْ نَذِيرٍ, that did not have any warners before. They were the people who had no warner before you. Why is it? In answer, dear listeners, we say that its purpose is to send a prophet who had a heavenly book, who was a clear warner, because it prolonged for centuries between the time of Jesus and the advent of Prophet of Islam, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, when no art prophet came. And this very matter gave a pretext to the atheists and mischief makers. So that was the point. That's why people of the Arab in that time accepted Islam and welcomed the concepts of Islam. In one of his sermons, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "Verily Allah sent Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam when none among the Arabs read a heavenly book or claimed prophethood. He, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, guided the people till he took them to their correct position and reached them their salvation." This is the greatness of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam through the mercy that the Almighty Allah had bestowed him and actually us with this religion. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Russian Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
On Saturday, as many as 100,000 people took to the streets of the Italian capital, Rome, to stage a demonstration against the European Commission's proposed costly rearmament plan. The initiative, organized by opposition party Five Star Movement, condemned Italy's Prime Minister Meloni's government and European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen's rearm plan, slamming the two leaders as warmongers.
They have been playing us all along. They told us that we had to defend Ukraine to defend Europe's freedom and territorial integrity. Dear Prime Minister Meloni, when it comes to Gaza, you simply turn away, pretending nothing is going on.
The demonstration was also attended by other opposition parties, including the Green Left Alliance and a delegation from the Democratic Party. Brussels has opted to rearm itself following the recent overwhelming geopolitical challenges. The EU's rearmament plan aims to mobilize around 800 billion euros over the next 4 years, the bulk of which will come from member states increasing their national spending on military equipment.
The European Union is seen as an entity that throughout two decades has largely impoverished the European middle class by adopting oppressive fiscal rules and pro-multinational economic policies. All this, people complain, has led to painful cuts in social spending and investments.
For sure, such a large expense will lead to more cuts to our struggling education and health systems. It's unacceptable.
Non sono I valori a difesa della democrazia.
Europe is no longer defending its democratic principles. The European Commission is rather advocating for private interests, in my opinion.
Europe has lost political significance over the past 20 years. This is because it's been completely subjected to the U.S. influence, supporting NATO's expansion and all regime change operations in West Asia.
Criticism of Rome's demonstration came from Italy's Deputy Prime Minister and Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani. On Saturday, Tajani said making citizens safer is the Italian government's priority. Max Civili, Rome.
It is only the second visit after his U.S. trip since the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in November 2024 and his first visit to Europe since October 7, 2023. As a party to the Rome Statute, Hungary was required to act on the ICC warrant, but it ignored its obligations. In a press conference, Orban stated that Netanyahu's visit aims to deepen military and intelligence cooperation as well as economic ties between the two sides. He stated that Israel is one of Hungary's largest trading partners.
What makes this matter sad is that today here in Budapest, the killer of 50,000 Palestinian citizens, mostly innocent women, children and elderly, is here in town. That's the sad part about it.
While Israeli flags were hoisted on government buildings and all bridges across the Danube, anti-Netanyahu protests have been banned by the authorities.
Since the beginning of the genocidal war, 544 days now, there was a clear position from the Hungarian government saying that any pro-Palestine protests will not be permitted or allowed, and that's why people couldn't express their opinion clearly.
Smaller, spontaneous protests occurred throughout the day, resulting in fines and arrests. One activist who had been fined several times stated that she was not even informed of the reason for the fines.
No, and the second time they pretended not to speak English until I was done. They spoke English and told me they do speak English. And when I asked them why, they refused to answer the two times.
Orban is not the only European leader who announced his willingness to defy international law. This state visit could set a precedent many around Europe fear.
This is, I think, one of the delicate elements of this issue, that it's not only Orban. It may be Merz in the near future. Tusk, the prime minister of Poland, has said the same.
Despite Orban's breach of international law, European governments have remained silent. As a result, observers believe that this is just the first of several upcoming trips to EU member states. Germany's next chancellor, Friedrich Merz, has already signaled his intention to invite Netanyahu and refuses to commit his country to enforce the ICC arrest warrant. Dieter Reinisch, Budapest.
We are here to denounce the ongoing massacres in Gaza and the Israeli incursion in Dara. The people resisted bravely, sacrificing martyrs in the fight against occupation. We stand with them and will never accept Israeli control over our land.
As Israeli airstrikes on Syria escalate, the response from the international community remains absent. In Dara, however, the people have taken matters into their own hands. The popular resistance in southern Syria has proven that armed struggle remains the only way to confront Israeli expansion.
We stand with our brothers in Dara, just as we stand with Gaza. Resistance will never be defeated. Just as Gaza's fighters remain strong, so too will the resistance in Syria. Syrians and Palestinians are united, and together we will defeat Israeli occupation.
Beyond the battlefield, many protesters also blamed Arab regimes for their complicity in Israel's crimes. Calls for accountability rang out against Arab leaders, accusing them of betraying the Palestinian cause and enabling Israeli aggression in the region.
The Israeli occupation will fall. It's only a matter of time, but those who betrayed Gaza and Dara, like Jordan, Egypt, the UAE, and others, must be held accountable. Their complicity is a crime, and no matter what they do, the people will triumph.
With every act of Israeli aggression, the spirit of resistance grows stronger. Today's protests in Damascus and other Syrian cities are yet another testament to the unwavering determination of Syrians and Palestinians to defeat Israel. Ali Mohammed, Damascus.
In Al-Katiba area in northwestern Khan Yunis, which is included within the so-called safe zone and not far from the infamous Al-Mawasi area, last night the families inside this neighborhood were sleeping and suddenly a massive explosion happened that shook the entire neighborhood. This home, which belongs to Al-Aggad family, was targeted last night, killing the entire family inside this house, father, the mother, and the three little children. But not only that, because of the devastating and massive scale of the bombardment, two of the neighbors as well were killed within this airstrike that was carried by the Israeli occupation.
You can see how closely the homes are built here. We were jolted awake by a thunderous blast, only to find the remains of neighbors scattered across the streets. Our neighborhood has already borne the brunt of Israel's aggression, and now, despite being labeled as a safe zone and instructed to be sought refuge here, we are still enduring relentless bombardment.
The families could collect the remains of the family and the neighbors due to this brutal attack that literally turned the family inside this home into pieces. The neighbors are still cleaning the rubble, looking for any of the remains of the family that was killed here.
The attack was so intense that we thought our home had been bombed, but it was our neighbors. We are still clearing the rubble, searching for more remains of the children who were killed alongside their parents here. These innocent people did nothing to deserve such a brutal end. We call on everyone in the world to put an end to this genocide.
This is the situation inside the so-called safe zone, where the occupation is now directing the families in southern Khan Yunis and Rafah to come to. More massacres and more killing is awaiting the families here who are still subjected to this massive campaign by the occupation that doesn't seem to go any easier on the families here. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis.
Whatever goes up must come down. A fitting theme for Yemen's military operations in support of Palestine. The armed forces of Yemen have downed yet another U.S. MQ-9 Reaper drone, an unmanned combat aerial vehicle capable of remotely control.
The
Yemeni army's air defenses, with the help of Allah Almighty, were able to shoot down an American MQ-9 drone while it was carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Al Hudaydah Governorate. The drone was downed with a locally made surface-to-air missile. This is the second drone being shot down in 72 hours and the 17th one during the operations in support of Gaza.
Yemen began its pro-Gaza operations in November 2023. Experts say the growing number of American drones being shot down by Yemen not only reflects tactical success, but signals a significant leap in the country's military capability.
The U.S. is very upset with what they have suffered in the Red Sea and Arabian Sea as Yemen continues to attack them. Moreover, Yemen will continue to advance militarily. Yemen is not satisfied with only shooting down 17 U.S. drones. In the near future, there will be more surprises that will benefit the people and armed forces of Yemen.
Amid the successful Yemeni operations, U.S. President Donald Trump has claimed that the country conducts its attacks with Iran's support, an allegation strongly denied by the Yemenis.
We will continue to support the people of Palestine. Our military success came from the preparation of our armed and air defense forces, and we will continue to counter this American aggression on our nation. We will continue to support Palestine. Iran is an ally of Yemen. However, they have no say whatsoever with regards to our wars and our military, defending our land from this U.S. aggression.
The United States launched intense airstrikes on Yemen last month after the Arab country resumed its maritime military operations in support of Palestinians in war-ravaged Gaza.
The Yemeni armed forces have shot down more U.S. drones, demonstrating their growing capability to counter advanced aerial threats and sending a clear message of defiance amid ongoing aggression against their country. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
On Wednesday, a number of Italian lawmakers pressured Italy's foreign minister Antonio Tajani to finally express words of condemnation for the Israeli regime and Benjamin Netanyahu after 18 months of relentless slaughter in Gaza. Tajani answered questions on Israel's genocidal acts in the Palestine during a question time in the Senate. His words were far from condemnation for Netanyahu's heinous crimes.
Our government's position is clear. Conditions for a political dialogue must be created in order to achieve a two-state solution, but without Hamas. I will reiterate this at tomorrow's EU summit of foreign ministers.
I'm flabbergasted. Once again, you haven't been able to express a single word of condemnation for Israel's onslaught of more than 50,000 people in Gaza, many of whom are children. Gaza is razed to the ground. Minister, you haven't been able to say a single word on the one responsible for this massacre, war criminal Netanyahu.
Italy's support to Israel's genocidal operations in Gaza has been so far unconditional. In January, the Italian government told Israeli officials that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu would not be arrested under an ICC warrant were he to visit the country. War criminal Netanyahu is slated to pay an official visit to Hungary this week following an invitation from Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán. Some Italian lawmakers have said Hungary should deny entry to Netanyahu or arrest him if he sets foot in the country.
Netanyahu's visit to Hungary is one of the many legs of the Israeli government's macabre tour of Europe. We deem Netanyahu and his government partners bloodthirsty war criminals, and unfortunately, the international community and most Western governments have failed to provide any opposition to Israel at all. We must strongly oppose the Israeli genocide by imposing sanctions on Netanyahu's government, including suspending Israel-EU association agreement.
Former EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs Josep Borrell has often insisted on convening a summit with Israel to discuss violations of human rights obligations under the EU-Israel Association Agreement. However, Borrell's successor, Kaya Kallas, has so far been much more obliging towards the regime than her predecessor, Max Civili Rome.
The Gaza Strip is facing a severe humanitarian crisis as Israeli blockade, now exceeding a month, continues to prevent the entry of essential aid, including food, fuel and medical supplies.
The Gaza Strip is going through the most dire circumstances ever. The famine is back again, even more severely, as 25 bakeries stop completely. This current crisis is unprecedented, as this is the longest time span of closure of the Gazan crossings by the Israeli regime. This in turn has caused the shortage of flour and fuel needed for the bakeries to operate.
The United Nations World Food Programme reported that all bakeries in Gaza have ceased operations due to the acute shortages of flour and fuel. The WFP emphasized that a bread, often the only accessible food for many families, is becoming unattainable, warning that famine is a serious risk looming for the Gazan population.
All the bakeries closed today because of the continuing closure of crossings. All what was stored in our warehouses by the WFP have been consumed completely. So here we are now, without any ingredients there is no way we can work. We used to consume 250 to 300 tons of flour daily, which was less than the actual amount needed for the population. Now there is no choice for us.
The dire humanitarian crisis is further exacerbated by the continuous Israeli military aggression that not only claims the lives of thousands, but also makes survival for 2.2 million Gazans a struggle.
As the blockade endures, the people of Gaza continue to face an increasingly desperate struggle for survival, with starvation looming as a significant threat besides the continuous Israeli aggressive attacks. Ghad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, don't hurt people. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to A to Z with me, Sister Zainab on Arab English Radio. And so title is Don't Hurt People, and obviously it's self-explanatory. It's self-explanatory whether we're Muslim or non-Muslim. But obviously the thing is, as Muslims, the bar is set really high for us. This is how we are meant to be conducting ourselves, because it's almost a grievous sin to really break the heart of a believer. And it's so, probably you can think about this, and you'd remember some instances yourself where maybe you've experienced this. So I remember, for example, a dear friend who was just finishing her last year of high school in the first year of Corona, and I had posted something on Instagram and about being kind and, you know, being careful with our words, and she had left me a message just to say how much she appreciated that, and in her voice I could hear that she was just about crying when she left that message. It had really touched her. And then came the explanation when I was speaking to her that someone had said some harsh words to her that morning, and he obviously saw her. And this was just a family member probably snapping or using a slightly harsh word towards her. And these things really can stay with people for the rest of the day. I think that psychology has recently said that your feelings just last a matter of seconds, really. But then the problem is we start to think about it more. And that's why, you know, obviously hurting a, hurting someone's heart, upsetting them because of that really is very tricky, because they can be upset and feel pain and for a whole day. It could even stay with them. A particularly harsh word could stay with them for months or years, and they never forget it. Welcome back to A to Z on RB English Radio. Sorry, so I'm talking about not hurting people. Look, there's a little anecdote, a story from one of our famous martyrs, Zeman the Sayyid. He was always was also concerned to raise children with the same standards that he had for himself. So, for example, he would say to his children, well, don't grill meat in the village, because maybe there's someone in the village who actually smell that beautiful aroma, someone who can't afford meat, and obviously they might, you know, just feel really pained at that, you know, not being able to sort of afford that beautiful meat with that beautiful smell. And he would sort of advise his children, for example, to drive small cars that, so that they didn't have anything that other people who maybe didn't have the means could desire. And once, I think, it said that he saw one of the children in a car that he, the Sayyid, thought was too big, and advised his child to get a nice small car just so you don't bother or hurt anyone. And he would, just as I said before, he, the Sayyid, would always say it's impermissible to hurt anyone's heart. And, you know, this is, I think this is something that we can for sure work on a daily basis. And, you know, it happens so easily. For example, maybe we just get in a car, we get in a taxi one day, and maybe the driver was trying to contact us, and, you know, maybe we'd come from somewhere, the phone was still on silent, and then, you know, you get in the car, and then all of a sudden the taxi driver's snapping. And, you know, some people don't shake it off so easily, and this is really the standard. We need to just sort of be very careful with our tongue, with our words in particular, and obviously with other things, but maybe this could be a little habit that we set ourselves, especially with the month of Ramadan, when that comes, to just think carefully before we speak, and control harsh words. Don't even let them get out of the mouth, basically. So inshallah, this is just a reminder to all of us, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on IB English Radio, and farewell for today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Palestinians posting on social media say they don't think they will survive Israel's bloody bombardment across the Gaza Strip. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, Palestinians are posting final messages and letters of farewell on social media, expressing their fear they will not survive amid the intensity of Israel's carpet bombing of the Gaza Strip. Many Palestinians in Gaza have turned to social media since the start of Israel's onslaught in October 2023 to communicate with one another, document Israeli regime